Silly Conversations, the podcast. Your host, Denzel Mills.
Ladies and gentlemen, another fantastic person to interview who's done many, many things, and he'll explain a little bit about some of the things he's done. Antonio, welcome to Silly Conversations. Remember, the name is silly, so we need some of that included, okay?
Okay. So thank you for inviting me to this amazing podcast.
Amazing is the word, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm Antonio Alvarez. As Denzel mentioned before, I have been talking with him around 5-7 years. I don't remember.
But not continuously. Not continuously.
No, not continuously, because if it would continuously, my English will be for sure better. But around 7 years, I think. But in some periods, different periods. And I am a telecommunication engineer working for an international company. So I went to Denzel because I needed English. Well, indeed, I still need English for my day by day, my work, my job. And this is the beginning of our relationship, probably.
Yeah.
And I know.
So, we haven't spoken for a long time. So where are you traveling now? Because obviously you said you work for an international company. So I suppose you're doing quite a lot of travels. I don't know, what countries are you traveling to for work?
In the last few months, I can say I visit Italy, Portugal, Germany, Denmark, and Italy. Yeah, Italy, Rome. And that's all.
But you speak Italian. I remember you said you speak Italian.
Yes, I speak a little bit Italian. But when I am working in Italy, I speak mostly English because my colleagues are from another countries. I am working, let's say, in a European team.
Right.
So, yeah. So I work with people from around Europe. So there are Italian people, of course, but I normally speak in English because at the same table, there are normally other people that are not Italian.
In terms of just your work, even when you're not traveling, what percentage do you say is in English? I suppose with telecommunications, a lot of the communication writing is in English, yeah?
All the documents basically are in English. But if I have to say a percentage of my time, probably now 50-55%, because I have a small team here in Spain who are Spanish.
Right.
So I interact with them in Spanish, but the rest of the team, the rest of my job is in English, basically.
And then in your team, I don't know, what's the English level of your team as the manager? How would you rate your team as the manager?
Well, we have people who are very, very well with the English, and they are speaking all the time in English. But we have a small group that I am pushing, trying them to learn English, because they are more familiar with the Spanish. They are working all the time in the Spanish market, and they are very, very focused on the Spanish projects and the Spanish customers. So they don't need the English, so they don't make the effort, let's say.
Yeah. So, telecommunications engineer. And I remember when we used to talk, and I think we started at some point a long time ago, when I think it was moving from 3G to 4G. And then from 4G to 5G or nearly 5G and these kind of things. Why telecommunications?
Why telecommunications?
Yeah.
Oof, a very, very difficult question for me, because if I am purely honest with myself, I would prefer study, journalist or, I don't know,
journalist. So you'd prefer to be on Telecinco, walking around the streets, chasing some famous person than...
No, not that kind. When I was super young, I imagined all the time in the middle of a war.
So like a war journalist?
Yeah, war journalist, explaining to the people what is happening there. I think that this is like my ideal work was when I was younger indeed, because I am still young.
just about.
But at the same time, I think that I am a pragmatic person, and also my parents, my family, push a little bit on me to study something more interesting, let's say, from the professional point of view. So they thought and they put on me this exactly this idea that engineering in general is better to find a good job.
Yeah, okay.
So that was the starting point for me. Then it's true that then when I started working the first years, for me, it was exciting because I understood how the telecommunication works, and specifically the mobile and radio frequencies and so on. And I am a curious person, so I think that was exciting at the beginning. And then I don't know why and when exactly, but I started doing other job, not a technical job properly. Managing projects and leading some projects, and I changed again my career a bit. So always in the telecommunication field, but doing other things.
So
if you ask me exactly why telecommunication, it's a very difficult question.
Well, I asked you the question. You answered with a good answer. If I'm not satisfied, then that's my problem. But it doesn't really matter. But you said now. Well, obviously, you said you're managing quite a lot of teams and multinational teams, and I suppose multicultural teams. Yeah.
Yes.
So what's the good and what's the bad of managing the teams?
The best of this multicultural team is when we are having dinner or in a coffee break or something like that, because we have the space to talk about each culture. So you talk with last week we were in Denmark talking about how is the policy in Spain with the children, how we manage this family life with the professional life and so on. So you discover in every country how they are dealing with this kind of problem. This is the best because you can understand the culture of other countries. And this is, for me, is very, very satisfying.
What's interesting? Tell me the worst.
The worst is the communication properly, but not English, not the language indeed, but how you communicate the messages. Because depending on the culture, you can be more direct. You need to be more soft or hard. Because depending on the culture, they are familiar with a specific kind of communication. Maybe this is the worst problem.
Yeah, I would say probably the Germans and the Scandinavians prefer the kind of direct approach, yes?
Yes, yes, yes.
And if we look, maybe this is just from studies and work I've done and things like that. And I suppose the Latin countries prefer a little bit more 5,000 words just to ask one question, yes?
Yes. And make me
I'm
nervous.
Getting there. I'm getting there. I'm getting there as well. Sometimes I listen to myself and I'm going around in circles. And then I realize the question is, so do you like tea or do you drink coffee? I'm kind of picking up the Latin style of asking questions.
Yeah, but they say I like coffee, but sometimes tea, but tea with milk sometimes, but not always. And but what do you want now?
Do you think from the experience, years of experience now, do you think you, like you said, because you explained it well, so which means you understand which way or a way to kind of approach each culture and each person in your team, etc. But dynamically, the day-to-day, is it something that is now in your DNA when you're communicating and managing your teams? Or sometimes you have to really make an effort to say, okay, I'm talking to Italians or it could be Indians or I'm talking to French or Portuguese. Is it something that is just you understand it now, or is it something that you really have to make an effort to tune into?
I still have to make an effort, definitely, because sometimes I don't, the first time that I meet someone, so I don't have in my DNA how to deal with someone specifically. So I need to adjust the message, how I communicate the message. So let's say that I have a first interaction. Mm-hmm. Just for introduction and so on. And I try to understand what exactly is the culture, because sometimes I know the name, but that's all.
Right.
I don't know. I have to imagine where is he or she from. So sometimes it's not so easy for me, and I don't have in my DNA how to do it. I think that I am adjusting still adjusting my way of communication depending on the people. Yeah.
In terms of work, because everybody has a stereotype, you know, and a lot of people think, oh, the Germans are very this and organized, etc. The Italians are a little bit maybe chaotic, etc. Which ones do you think do that little bit of that little extra? Those kind of people you can say, okay, if I ask the French or the German or the Italian or Spanish or British to do that little bit extra, I know they will do it. Or the ones who are just like, it's 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock.
I think that Scandinavian people always, when the 5 o'clock, they are done and it's okay. Everybody assume that it's common, it's perfectly okay. But the south of Europe is different. I think that we work a lot,
right.
And German people depend, under my point of view, and this is 100% my experience, but it's not reality probably. It's just an opinion.
It doesn't matter, because I doubt if this podcast will ever get to Germany. Because at the time of recording, he's going to...
Please, German people, don't... Yeah. No, I think that German guides in specifically, I think that depend on the field that they are working.
Right.
If we work in telecommunication, they work like Spanish people, something like that. Indeed, we start before, because when we are there in Germany, we start at around 8 o'clock, and they start arriving to the office at 9, something like that. And we finish both German and Spanish at the same time, 7, 8, if we have a lot of work to do.
Right.
And depend on the project and present on the customer and this kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's not about where they are from, but depend on the if they work in telecommunication.
So the activity.
The activity. Yeah.
Okay. What's the new trends? Because you know me. Listen. Yeah, I investigate things, and I am doing some work with a telecommunications company. I forgot to tell you, I am doing some work with a telecommunications company at the moment, and I don't see much changes or much development. Because remember, like I said, when we started, it was like 3G and 4G, and people were talking about the Internet of Things, etc. But it sounds like everything's just slowed down. Are we at the maximum, or is there no need to make any improvements because business as well as, I don't know, private people like me, we can do exactly what we want. We can watch the Netflix on our phones, etc. Is there any new things happening?
Yeah, definitely, yes. The problem is the return of the investment in the mobile operators.
Okay.
They are investing a lot of money, huge money in the deployment of the 4G, 5G, fiber, because they need fiber to support the 5G, blah blah blah, and they cannot get money in return. Why? Because you are paying the same that 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But they are still investing. So let's say that they are slowing down the investment because of the return. But the technology is there. I mean, there are technology that they are going to deploy in the next 5-7 years. Indeed, in our
5 or 7 years, I'm going to wait 5 or 7 years to get some real action on my phone.
Yes, I think so. That this is just an opinion, of course, but I am not, let's say, an analytic. But I think so. But the point is that we always say that we generate the needs of the customer. Means that when you had in the past 4G. You were happy. You say, okay, I have 4G, all my services are okay, my internet speed is okay, everything is okay. I don't need more.
Exactly.
But we arrive with 5G and we offer you, well, not me, but we offer you, yeah, the companies offer you new services and you say, wow, I need that. I definitely need that. But it's not a real need. It's just something that they are generating for you. So at this point, there are some services that need new technology.
Right.
Yeah. So, but they are stopping the development because of the money. Now, you know, in Spain, but you can extrapolate to Europe, America, there is an evident crisis in the mobile operators. Vodafone have been acquired by Cegona. Orange and MasMobile are now one
so
single company.
So Vodafone now is not independent. It was taken over by another company.
Yes, yes. Okay. Segona is an investment company.
Right.
They acquired Vodafone. They keep the they kept the brand.
Right.
But but it's not, and the owner is now totally different. It's not British anymore. Sorry,
Brexit. No, no, don't sorry me. The Brexit people are very stupid, extremely stupid, and I think a lot of people are realizing now in Britain, the ones who voted for Brexit, I think a lot of people now are realizing the reality of the consequence. It's about 3 years later now. This is like the third year of Brexit. So all these agreements that they had with the European Union for the transfer period, the grace period, now is kind of ending. And I think now people are realizing what a bad mistake it was. The Brexit people can do what they like. And they won't be listening to this because no British person learns another language. So they're not going to be listening to this anyway.
That's true.
You were in like the Spanish judo national team at one point when you were like a young, healthy, small young person. Yes.
Yeah.
Not saying he's, I mean, he still looks very healthy now, to be quite honest, but you know, things happen over the 1,000 years you live in. And well, he used to do like judo and all these kind of things. So I don't know what are you up to now in terms of activity or life?
This is my passion. Let's say this is my what I like very very much probably, and I am training 3 times per week, and then I am teaching some young guys that want to compete. And
so you're teaching judo?
I'm teaching judo at the same time that I am receiving classes at the same time.
You're taking classes again, and then are you going to try to get your teaching certificate in judo? I don't know exactly what you need to do to get a teaching certificate in judo.
Yeah, I already have it, indeed.
One moment.
During my...
Stop, one moment, because now you're just making me look stupid, okay? So I'm going to change the question. How long have you had your teaching certificate in judo?
There are like 3 levels.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say 3 levels. And I have the second one, and I think that I passed my exam for the first title with 18 years old, something like, when I was 18 years old, something like that, so many years ago.
Okay.
And the second one this year. And you need the black belt second dan.
The second dan.
Dan is like the level. No?
Yeah.
And so I already have it, so I passed my exam for the second level.
So, are you a sensei? Is it no? Do they use sensei for
sensei.
For judo? Sensei for judo? Yes.
Yeah.
So really, I should.
Well, because sensei for me means more like master, someone who is very experienced. I practiced judo since 30 years ago. Okay, but it's not enough to call me sensei. Sensei is more like
but out of respect,
master Mai.
Out of respect, and on this podcast now, you know, we're going to call you Sensei Antonio. Sensei Antonio, yeah?
Okay.
So you're also teaching kids now. So well, first of all, I mean, like I said, I know you was involved in judo for a long time. So for you, it was just like a natural thing that you maybe want to teach some children judo and the discipline, etc. Was it just a natural thing, or did somebody ask you to teach some classes?
There is a group in my gym that are, let's say, training more, and they want to fight in competition and so on, and they need, let's say, additional lessons or additional training sessions to increase or improve the performance, improve the techniques and so on and so on. So let's say that there was a need in my gym, and they say, okay, maybe you are the correct person to do it, because I compete for, I think that I fought 15 years or something like that in national championships, international, and so on. So I have, let's say, I have the experience in competition.
Right.
So I am just trying to transfer to them what I learned during my my competition days.
So yeah. I have no idea, and I've watched judo and I was watching the Olympics, and it was taekwondo.
Taekwondo.
Is it taekwondo? And all the only thing I can remember was people with extremely long legs kicking. So my question is, if you were teaching me judo, what would be one of the first things you'd teach me to do? The basic, the absolute basic, as if I walked into
the... The first step in judo are the, I don't know how to say in English, las caídas, how to
fall.
How to fall, yes.
Yeah, okay. This is what I've heard, because I had some friends who did judo. This is how to fall. For me, I think you should teach me the first thing in judo is not to cry, okay? So I think personally, I was like, teach me not to cry and then to fall, not the other way around. Because if I fell and I'm crying on the floor, this is not good.
Before we continue our conversation with Sensei Antonio, need to pay the bills. So a word from our sponsors. Nice. English for Judo. Are you a judo specialist going international? Maybe you need a little bit of English. Phrases like, ouch, ooh, ah. Sentences like, that hurts. Please, can you stop? Do you have to put your foot on my head? And the most famous, does my arm really need to bend that way? English for judo. Contact us to find out more. 10 hours and you will be proficient in English for judo. Now that the bills are paid, we can go back to the conversation with Sensei Antonio. The continuation.
Denzel, instead of Sensei, I have another name for you that maybe is very good for this podcast. I am running for president in the Regional Federation of Judo. So maybe you have to call me instead of Sensei, President.
I can't believe this. Mr. President. Now, people need to know. First of all, you need to tell them in which region you're running for president.
Extremadura.
Right. And I wanted you to say this because I also know a lot of people never visit Extremadura. Right. I've been once or twice, only twice in my life, I think. And I know lots of people have no idea what's in the area, you know? So we could do public announcement. Why? Tell me, Mr. President, you know, Sensei, Mr. President, tell me why.
I am running for Judo Federation, but anyway, I can, of course, talk about my home because it's amazing.
Yeah, tell people what's here, what's there.
Yeah, I love this question because when I say Extremadura, everybody imagine everywhere is dry, no forest, no green valleys, anything. But Extremadura has two parts, okay? The south is true that it's very dry. We have peaks and that's all, basically. Yeah. But the north, well, we have in the south, in Badajoz, we have Mérida, which mm-hmm. is one of the most beautiful cities in Spain, at least, because we have the Roman theater, Roman bridge, and it's a Roman city that is amazing. We have a party, which is Merita Ludica. It's a Roman party in June that you have to
You wouldn't
to
say
visit.
Party, you say festivity. Festivity.
Festivity.
Or festival. Okay. Festival.
Festival. Yeah, and everybody is dressed with the Roman dress, traditional dress. There are markets. I don't know how to
you
say
You mean dressed like with the tunics.
Yes, yes. There okay. are, how do you say this, desfilar, like,
it's not pedestrians. Pedestrians are the people. Yeah, I'm trying. I know it starts with P. It's not hang on a minute. It's not.
I got you.
It's not that you technically speaking. It's not that you've caught me. I'm doing slow thinking. Okay.
Okay.
I'm doing processions. There you are. Slow processions. Thinking. Processions. Okay. So you do processions.
There are processions with legionnaires and traditional Roman military processions.
Right. Okay.
And then we have the north. Let me just quickly speak about the north because I am in love with the north of Extremadura. We have Cáceres, for example, which is it's a very beautiful city, but we have Herte, Gata, Las Urdes, are amazing places with rivers, waterfalls, mountains. So you have everything there.
But the thing is, though, Extremadura is like super big. I have to admit one thing, though. I did go to Cáceres and it was closed.
The entire city.
It was one time. It was one time from fires. You know, like fires here with all the noise, etc. And I thought, you know, I need to get away. And so I went. And I think it was like a Monday. I arrived on a Monday, and it had that sensation of like when I first came to Spain. You know, many years ago, like everything on a Monday was kind of closed. Lunchtime, everything was closed. And so I always say that when I went to Cáceres and I arrived that Monday or something, it was just closed. And I remember that evening, I was walking around Cáceres, the old town, and I heard some music in a bar. And I thought, oh, I like the music here. I'll go into this bar, ask about, you know, where I can get something to eat. So I went into the bar, and it was like, I don't know, it was like one of those Western movies, because it was me, the bartender, and a kind of artist guy who was about 95 years old. And that was it, just the three of us. And so then I come out and I say to the guy, listen, is there anywhere where I can get somewhere to eat, etc.? And he says, you know, come with me. Yeah. So we go outside and we're standing, you know, in the road. And he was then explaining, he was saying, pues ahí hay un bar, la comida es muy buena, pero esta no abre hasta los martes. Y el siguiente, fantástico, un poco caro, pero eso no abre hasta los jueves. And he was just going on telling me all these places, but none of them would open until like Wednesday or Thursday or even Friday.
Yeah.
And so I went back into there and just sat there with the artist and the owner of the bar and myself. The English teacher, the artist, and the bar owner. This is a joke, must be.
A joke, yeah.
This is a joke. Yeah. So you were talking about the festival in Mérida. I always have difficulty saying some of these words, Mérida, and then Cáceres, etc. And in the north, you said it was kind of very much greenery, mountains and water and things like that, yeah?
Yes, exactly, yeah. This is because in the north, the weather is totally different. So and also the forest and waters and everything.
It's a big area. It's a very big area.
Yeah, it's a huge area, yeah, absolutely.
And then so you're doing that. The judo classes. What do you need to become president?
I need support from the people.
so but what kind of support? Do you go around and kiss babies and promise? I don't know, like the president's always kiss babies, yeah. Or you know, do you go around and kiss babies? Like,
no, I just need to promise that we will have world championship in our federation. We will have the best equipment. The best tatami, everything will be super good. And that's all. This is what all the politicians do, no? Before the, when they are running for president.
So, ladies and gentlemen, pay attention to this when you start listening to this podcast or when you find this podcast. Listen to this. If in several years' time, the Spanish Judo Federation becomes one of the best in the world, wins lots of world championship, wins lots of medals in the Olympics is in 4 years' time. So in the next
Los Angeles.
4 to 8 years' time, starts winning lots of recognition and lots of people take up judo, you need to thank this man, Sensei, President Antonio, who appeared and made his statement on Silly Conversations. This is going to be the start of the whole thing.
I will be running in a small federation, but this is only the beginning.
It's only Take over the world. Take over the Spanish Federation. Yeah. Take over the European Federation for Judo.
Yes, definitely. I have to do it. I don't know if I have enough time, but I have to do it.
Yeah, but the thing is, what you've got the language skills, you've got the people skills, and you're teaching and you've been involved. So you're two-thirds of the way there. All you need is just a large amount of money to start, slipping into people's hands. That's all. Large amounts of money.
Yeah, but consider that maybe the Extremadura Federation maybe is one of the poorest federation in Spain, maybe in the world. So
solve your problem. I got your problem solved. Use your profession, telecommunications engineer. Offer people extra connections. Just say, I can get you more bandwidth if you vote for me.
Yeah, this is one of my main proposal for my presidency. I said that I have to, we have to automate all the processes, digitalize the federation, and so on. This is one of my points because I am engineer. I cannot say I all the time say we are doing a lot of hand work, and this is not possible in the.
Exactly. You know,
21st century. Yeah.
Let's put everything digital. And then secondly, what you could do, this suggestion might be a little bit controversial the way things are, but you could get a few people who know how to manipulate things on the internet, and then you could cut the supply of internet things to the other federations or the other people who want to be presidents. Probably in Extremadura, what you could do is probably, I don't know. Well, they have good wine. In Extremadura, yes. They have nice wine, okay? Nice meat and et cetera. So maybe you can develop something where you can actually just manipulate the circumstances where the actual president and the board of presidents don't get their regular rations of wine and jamón. You can just be the controller of that.
We have a competition here in Extremadura, national competition, and if you win, also jamón.
A leg of ham, yes.
Yeah, a leg ham. Yeah, yes. It's a way to incentive.
An incentive, yeah.
It's correct.
Incentive.
Yeah, incentive. For them, so
I think as a good incentive, if we can get, or if I can get, I don't know how it's going to work because the promotion on this is just going to be when I feel like it. But imagine if I could get 100 subscribers from 100 to 150, so in that range, okay, subscribers from 100 to 150. Sensei, President Antonio, will send you a jamón.
That's true, yeah.
Exactly.
It could be my best option to win, yeah.
No, I mean, for me to get subscribers, and then what would happen is my subscribers would then go to Extremadura, empadronar in Extremadura, and then vote for you.
That's a good strategy, yes, definitely.
You got to think
of things. Yeah, we can explore that way. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. So apart from this is very cool. Catching up with you and then find out where you are and soon to be president of Extremadura Judo Federation.
Yes.
Ooh, that's a big area. Okay.
Let's say, yeah. It's a big area, but there's
only five so judo people in Extremadura. Yeah.
I think that we have 1,000 people, 1,100 or something like that.
Okay. Well, maybe if you could all move them into the same place, it would help because Extremadura is very big.
You know?
So if you could move them closer.
I will propose to concentrate everybody in one single city.
Exactly. Then it looks like there's lots, you know, walk to the supermarkets in the judo outfit, park the cars in the judo outfit, go, you know, everything. But yeah, but Antonio has been very nice catching up, very, very nice catching up. And then at some stage later, when the podcast picks up and there's thousands of subscribers, I didn't really know the word, and hundreds of thousands of listeners, and you are the president of the Judo Federation, not just of Extremadura, but Spain, and you're going for the president of the Judo Federation for Europe, we'll have this chat again just to kind of give you good luck and work out some strategies of how.
But I think that you will reach the 1,000 subscribers or 1 million before I lead the International Federation.
Really?
But anyway, I can come back if you want.
Yes, anyway. But realistically, I mean, this is ambitious, 1,000 subscribers. I think on a good day, I might get 10. And maybe I need to pay people.
But look, if I am president of the Federation, I will force all my yes. people to subscribe to the podcast.
Yes. Yes.
That is my first.
The first thing. That's really my first thing you do in the presidency.
Guys,
silly conversations.
Yeah. Silly conversation is a must for us. So if you want to continue in the judo world, you need to subscribe to Silly Conversation. Yeah.
These are the things. These are the things I like, and people. This is how well I train people. There's a level of commitment and support even many, many, many years after. And this is what I like. If you're listening, if you are anywhere near Extremadura, if you're close, just move to Extremadura and vote. I don't know how it works. Just vote. And if you're not anywhere near Extremadura, instead of going to Benidorm, which is nice, go and explore Extremadura.
Lakes and rivers that are better than any of the beaches in the south of Spain, for
exactly.
sure.
The only thing is, don't go on a Monday because it's closed.
That's true.
So, Antonio, really, it's been very, very cool catching up with you and the plans to become president of the world.
Let's see. Thank you for inviting me, Denzel. It's been a pleasure to chat a bit with you. So
it was nice to kind of just have a chat, catch up, and hopefully we can make this a kind of regular thing every couple months or whenever. You know, you can tell us how sensei president elect, because you need the word elect, you see, because you're not president
yet. Yeah.
So our sensei president elect is going with the campaign and how many babies you had to kiss since the last podcast. Okay.
Okay, Denzel. Thank you very much.
Yeah, take care, man. Take care and look after yourself. Care. That was my conversation with Antonio. I think he's very modest. I know what he does and the amounts of projects and groups he actually works with and even the budget that he works with. So he's very modest in terms of talking about his work and what he does, the impact he's making for the company he works for and the people he works for. It was really nice to catch up with him to find out about the activities and him explaining a little bit about where he lives. Silly conversations. Not so silly, but informative. Maybe I should change the name. Informative conversations. Thank you very much for listening. This was Informative Conversations. See ya. The voices and the names have been changed in this podcast to protect the wicked. For any grammar, information, or correction, please ask someone else, not me.